Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. In this Sports Interview with Ann Liguori show, hear all about the Lynx Magazine Top 100 courses. It's called the Lynx Top 100 in the world, as voted on by golf architects throughout the world. Lynx Magazine editor George Pepper details the Lynx Top 100 list, and there are some surprises, such as which golf course is ranked number one, edging out number two. It's great to see some of Northern Ireland's top Lynx courses high on the list, and renowned golf course architect Seth Rayner has a good number of courses that are ranked high on the list. Nathan Grube, tournament director of the Travelers Championship. He joins us to talk about one of the most popular PGA Tour stops Nathan Grube, tournament director of the Travelers Championship, joins us to talk about one of the most popular PGA Tour stops and the only signature PGA Tour event in the Northeast. And Hal Sutton, winner of 14 PGA Tour events, including the 1983 PGA Championship and two-time Players Championship winner, he joins us this hour as well. Hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. Pleasure to say hello to George Pepper, editor of Lynx Magazine. George, so great to catch up with you. I've been, friendly with you for years, have followed your career in the golf business for decades, and you're still going strong. So it's great to connect.
Well, you too, Ann, as I say, back at you.
Back at you for sure. And I know this Lynx 100 is very exciting. This list is a new ranking of the top 100 golf courses in the world, voted on by golf course architects, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, Lynx has been around for over 25 years now, and who better to do these such a ranking than Lynx Magazine, whose bailiwick is golf courses and golf course architecture and travel. And yet we'd never done it because the three other magazines now, originally Golf Magazine, Golf Digest, now Golf Week the last few years, all have their own very good lists. So the question is, you can't just be a me too, you need something to distinguish your list. And finally, after about a decade of thinking about it, we came up with what we think is a good alternative, namely, as you say, using the golf architects, because who knows more about golf courses than the people who design them for a living. So we think we have something that's distinctive and arguably more definitive than the others.
Well, let's go right to the top. I will waste no time. Drum roll, please. And Cypress Point, the Alistair McKenzie gym, beats out Pine Valley for number one spot, Cypress Point.
Yeah, well, it's not like it won by 10 strokes or something. It was a nose. And it, you know, either one of them could arguably be the best in the world. I guess the difference is Pine Valley, there's probably no golf course in the world with a greater collection of 18 holes than Pine Valley. But for a singular experience in the game, for just a great walk in nature, an exhilarating 18 holes, beautiful place to play. I don't think you can beat Cypress Point. I've always said there's no better place in the world to play badly than Cypress Point.
Just incredible views, incredible experience if you can get on either of them, Cypress Point or Pine Valley. But what did the folks at Pine Valley think about coming in second to Cypress Point?
Well, you know, it's funny. I go back with Pine Valley because when I was at Golf Magazine, we started the ranking in 1979. And up to that point, Golf Digest had been ranking courses, but they had put them into groups of 10. So the first 10 golf courses tied for first place or 10th place, however you want to look at it. We were the first to actually rank courses numerically. And Pine Valley came out number one. And I remember very distinctly getting some negative reaction because everybody in the world then wanted to play the number one course in the world. So maybe they're a little relieved now that at least one magazine rates them number two.
Yeah, I'm looking at the scores, and you are correct. Very, very close. Cypress Point in this Links 100 list scored 48 points, and Pine Valley came in second, scored 47.58. So, very, very close margin for sure.
Yep.
Can you talk about how they were judged by these architects? What was the criteria mostly?
Yeah, I mean, that begs the question, how do you get these numbers? Well, first of all, the grading system was on a 5-point scale, with five being the best, but we allowed the architects to give half points, in other words, 3.5, 4.5. We gave a bonus for courses they visited in the previous 5 years. And again, sort of going back to the Golf Magazine theory of doing this versus Golf Digest. Golf Digest has always had a very strict list of criteria. I think it's almost 10 different categories, and they ask each of their panelists, I believe, at least is the way they always did do it, to rank each of those 10 categories for a course, whether it's beauty or chat resistance to scoring or shot values, all these things. And we felt that that was a bit, we have a bunch of busy people here, these architects. We're not going to ask them to do 10 votes for each golf course. And number two, if you have people as discerning as golf course architects, I don't think you need to tell them what makes a good golf course. And so what we've basically done is trust their own judgment. We did give them six guidelines, which I'll just run through you quickly.
Sure.
Number one, how well the course tests the full range of skills. Two, the design rhythm, the flow and balance of a course. Three, variety, both of the terrain and the individual holes. Four, the skill of the routing and the navigability of the golf course. Five, the beauty, setting, and course conditionings. And lastly, imaginative or admirably restrained use of the given land. Now, yeah, those were just guidelines, though. And the bottom line is we trusted each of them to come up with his or her own definition of what's best. So basically, what we have is an objective average of a couple hundred very subjective opinions.
Sure. And if you look at the routing of Cypress Point, the natural beauty, the meandering amongst the Pacific Ocean, it's hard to compete with that for sure, whether you're Pine Valley or not. Number three on the list, George Pepper, we go to Northern Ireland, Royal County Down. And I love Royal County Down. Just was able to play it for the fourth time this past summer. And oh, it's just better than ever. I was really happy to see a Northern Irish course number three. Your thoughts on Royal County Down?
Yeah, I mean that's another one. There's it's almost a combination of the great routing and individual holes of Pine Valley and the exhilaration seaside character of Cypress Point rolled into one. And then of course you have the international feel of Ireland. There's I think people who go up to that part of the world are kind of divided between those who love County Down and those who love Portrush. And Roe Portrush came in number nine, so. That ain't bad either. I think one of the things that struck me about the list and is that it mirrors sort of the domination of the world of three different elements. If you look at the 19th century, that was the British Empire, right? So we have, I don't know, it's like 20 some courses that appeared or were first designed in the 1880s, 1890s. And of those, I think 15 are GB and I courses. Now, if you go to the 20th century, which is the preponderance of the, it's like 63 or 4 members of this list, most of those, probably close to 40 of them, are US. I mean, the 20th century belonged to the United States. Now, here we are in the first first quarter of the 21st century. Who knows, 75 years from now, what nation, if any, can be looked back upon as the dominant nation? What it is right now, it's the rest of the world is the dominant force, and certainly in golf. So there are about, I think there's 17 golf courses who appeared since 2000, and of those, I think 12 are outside the U.S. Most of them in the Far East, whether it's Australia, New Zealand, China, Vietnam. There's one for Vietnam. So I think the next few years, this list is going to change as golf courses are built more actively around the world. The fastest growing golf country in the world, I think, right now is Vietnam in
Wow.
terms
Yeah, I
of.
noticed that. I noticed a lot of courses on this Links 100 are from Australia. We can talk about that in a second. But getting back to Royal County Down, St. Andrews, when you're talking about courses, across the pond outside of the United States, St. Andrews is always at the top of that list. And I see Royal County Down is number three, Northern Ireland, and St. Andrews, Scotland is number five. That was interesting.
Yeah, and that of course offends me greatly because that's my favorite course in the world, and I
And you're a
actually
member of the
lived
RNA for sure.
there for a long time. So I'm willing to look the other way on that one. But it is my favorite golf course, bar none. But I also understand the opinion of a lot of people who come to the old course at St. Andrews and play it the first time, and say, well, "What's the big deal here?" When Sam Snead came into St. Andrews in 1948 for the Open on a train, he looked out the window. He said, "Look, an old abandoned golf course." I said, "No, pal, that's where you're going to be playing the Open Championship next week." So it's not a visually impressive course, and I think in that regard, if you were to take the top 10 courses in Ireland and compare them to the top 10 in Scotland, I think Ireland wins. They're much more, again, exhilarating. They're sited much more closely to the sea, some of them on cliffs above the sea. But where Scotland wins, in my view, is in bench strength. You can play 50 courses in Scotland and never play a bad one. And I don't think you can do that in Ireland.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ireland, I think every time you play this incredible golf course, you just drive 20 minutes down the road and you see another course and you can play that's just as spectacular. It's just, but maybe it's because Ireland, up until maybe 25 years ago, wasn't really a well-known golf destination. People, Americans would go to Scotland knowing that St. Andrews was the birthplace of golf. But it's really in the last, say, 25 years that American golfers have been educated about the incredible links courses and parkland courses in Ireland and Northern Ireland, I feel. I know I do a lot of coverage of golf in Ireland. So I feel like, I played a lot of them in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And it's interesting to see Royal County Down as number three above number nine, Royal Port Rush, which is hosting the Open Championship again, 6 years after they did it. When was it, 2019-ish? So yeah, I mean, great that Ireland's on this list a few times and that people are recognizing Royal County Down and Royal Port Rush.
Yeah, well, I think the reason for the Irish ascendance is, and Scotland would, I think, be the first to admit this, the Irish Tourist Board has done a much better job over the last 20 or 30 years than the Scottish Tourist Board has. They have really marketed themselves. They go to the PGA show. They have romanced the likes of you and me to get us over there, to write about it, to talk about it. And, yes, the old course in Scotland has attracted a lot of people for the last 50 years. But then, those people go to Scotland a couple of times and they say, well, let's take a look at Ireland, and they aren't disappointed.
That's right. And then you have Lahinch at number 23.
I love the hinge.
Yeah, I think Ireland will be happy with this Links 100 list for sure. Let's move to the east end of Long Island because, as you know, that's my hometown in West Hampton. And National Golf Links of America, the CB McDonald, just incredible course built back in what, 1889, is number four, beating Shinnecock Hills. Just by two, Shinnecock number six. That's interesting, George.
Yeah, well, again, if you look at the scores there, National 46.3 and Shinnecock 45.3, they're not too far apart. I think one of the reasons for that, remember, these are architects, and National has a very famous architect in C.B. McDonald.
Sure.
Innocock's architecture is often debated, and it's not, there's a bunch of guys who are involved with that. It's not quite the same. And I think there may be an inordinate reverence for McDonald and Rayner. If you ask me, no, because I love them, those guys. But that might be the reason, because it's not, National isn't the test of golf. You couldn't hold a U.S. Open there.
Right.
At least not without a pretty low score, but it sure is a charmer, and it has some really interesting holes.
And they've held Walker Cups there. But yeah, I mean, obviously it borders Shinnecock, and people will say they just love National because it's playable.
Well, yeah,
It's
that
not going to kill you.
I go. I had been fortunate to play those courses, not a lot, maybe a half dozen times each over 50 years. And I, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I loved Shinnecock because I was, young, and I was fit, and that I could play reasonably well. When I was in my 40s and 50s, I liked Maidstone because I was kind of a family man then, and this appealed to me. What a beautiful, I think it's the
Sure.
only club in the Met area whose beach is the Atlantic Ocean. All right, so
Right.
now I'm in my 60s and 70s. I kind of like bumping it around National.
It's just both are extraordinary. And the fact that the East End of Long Island has so many courses we can talk about here. So National Golf Links came in number four, Shinnecock number six. Then you have Fisher's Island, a Seth Rayner gem, 32. And Friars had 35, so the East End of Long Island well represented on this Links 100 list, George.
Remember though, Fisher's Island is in New York State.
Oh, yes. Okay. We say East End of Long Island because we take the boat over from Southampton. But you're
It's
right.
all,
We can't claim that officially as East End
it
of
should
Long
be
Island.
Connecticut after all. Yeah, that's my favorite course within 3,000 miles of here. I just,
Is that right? Talk about Fisher's Island. Why do you
well,
love it so?
I'm very lucky to be doing their centennial history as we speak. When
Oh.
we hang up today, I'll go back to work on that. And it's just, well, again, it's Seth Rayner, and he had maybe his, probably without question, his best piece of land. I don't know what exactly the number of shots you can see salt water from, but it's something like, if there are 36 shots tee to green, it's something over 30. And it's just a great collection of his template holes, and just, and again, a great walk.
Isn't it great to be in this business? And how many decades now have you been doing this, George? Traveling the world, playing these golf courses,
I'm on my
editing,
50th
writing
year.
about this great sport. It's a blessed life, right?
This is just 50 years for me, I think, this year, maybe 51. So yeah, we remember Herb Griffith. He said, "Welcome to the toy department." That's when I got hired by Golf Magazine. Welcome to the toy department. And it's just, yeah, we're. I think it was Jimmy Cannon, a sports writer, the New York sports writer, said golf writers are, sports writers, golf writers in particular, are underpaid and overprivileged.
We'll leave it at that. How true. How true. George Pepper, always a pleasure. Links Magazine editor, really fun to look at this Links 100 list. Continued success.
Thanks, Anne. See you out there.
Joining us now is Nathan Groob, the tournament director of the Travelers Championship, coming up June 18th to 22nd. Going to be here very soon, Nathan Groob. Welcome back to Talking Golf. How are you?
I am well, Anne. Always love coming on. Thanks for the opportunity.
Our annual on-air chat. It's so much fun always to catch up with you.
Is. That means the tournament's right around the corner. I know I see a couple times a year at Augusta and other places, but whenever we do this interview, I'm like, oh man, we're 42 days out. It is right around the corner.
So how did Media Day go? I'm so sorry I could not make it this year, but I hope the WFAN team did okay.
I don't know what the where they placed in the competition. We'll leave that for another discussion. But it was great to see them, and Media Day is always fun. I mean, especially up here in New England, it's like, when Media Day is happening. You know, the tournament's right around the corner. And Scotty was great, obviously. You know, he won our tournament last year in the playoff against Tom Kim. And to have him, you know, talk about how excited he is to come back and, you know, have him the number one ranked player in the world and, you know, coming back. And then actually we just announced we have actually 10 of the top 10 in the world golf ranking coming back now that have all committed. So it's going to be awesome. Media day was a blast. The weather was perfect. We gave Scotty, as typically, you know, Andy Bassett from Travelers, he always likes to do something very personal for the guys. So we gave him his very fun defending champion gift, which was pretty cool. And he loved it. And then, you know, he's obviously taken the momentum from media day into this weekend. You know, I mean, let that be a lesson to all players, you know, have media day at Travelers and then you're going to break a scoring record at the next tournament. So.
I know. I was reading the transcripts from media day of Scottie Scheffler, and he said he didn't think his ball striking has, you know, been as sharp as it was last year and the year before. But my goodness, whatever he did at during that interview certainly propelled him. He leads by what, 8 shots at the Byron Nelson.
Yeah, and between you and I would love to have my ball striking not be in a good place and shoot 61. So yeah, that's definitely my goal.
And so what, tell us about the gift that Travelers gave Scottie Scheffler.
So you know this about kind of the personality of our title sponsor, Travelers. Everything's personal to them, right? Like when we invite the players, the media, the caddies, like everything is personal. This is an event that we feel like, you know, we want it to feel like a home game for everybody who comes here. So with our defending champion, we always try to make it a very, very personal gift. You know, I'm like Keegan Bradley, we got him a seat from Fenway, you know, during one of the renovations that he, you know, because he's a Red Sox fan. And Xander, you know, he's a huge, you know, cigar, like we got him a cigar and a humidor. And so anyway, but Scotty is getting really into coffee. And so I actually, Andy said, I talked about this and I share this addiction with Scotty when it comes to coffee. But so we ended up getting him a roaster to where he could roast his own beans at the house, and he opened it up and just the look on his face is pretty cool. And what I wanted to do is to warn him, because once you go down this rabbit hole of roasting your own coffee beans, it's a very it's a place where you just it's amazing. I mean, to roast your own beans from the green and, you know, things like that. But Scotty's a huge coffee fan, so I think he appreciated the fact that we you know, gave him a personal gift, and he was really excited about it. And when he opened it up, so it was fun to see.
Well, I share that passion, but I tell you what, if I have more than one cup, it definitely affects my putting. So he obviously can handle drinking that caffeine and you know, and playing golf. I mean, you gotta, I don't know about you, but I can't have coffee after like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I was going to say, I know where my limit is. I start to feel it, but it's there somewhere, but I feel like that threshold gets pushed further and further. But yeah, I can't, if Scotty, you know, somehow holds on to his 8-shot lead today, I say that with a joke, you know, that I'm sure he's going to attribute it to roasting his own beans this week of how he's
I'm telling you.
With his game.
Well, he's back. He is certainly back. And
oh my
just
goodness.
Your memories from his win last year, Nathan Grubb. I mean, you know, it really came, well, it went to a playoff.
It did. I will say that one of the most enjoyable things that I love for our fans is when you get a one-hole playoff. Because what happens is, for those that haven't been to the property, 15, 16, 17, and 18 kind of like go around a lake and kind of culminate in 18. So it's kind of this huge loop that from a viewing experience is a pretty cool experience. So when you get a one-hole playoff, it gives the fans time to fill in that bowl, to fill in 18. And some of the coolest moments we've had, you know, with the tournament have been in like 1 to 2 hole playoffs where the crowds, I mean, just the crowds are, they're unbelievable. And to have them still on an 18 is just great. And so when Scotty and Tom went to the playoff, like I knew it was going to happen. I mean, it was just going to, I mean, the bowl was going to fill in. You got the number one ranked player in the world, you know, Tom's doing everything he can to chase him down. And it was awesome. And Scotty's just, I mean, Scotty is as good of a guy as he looks on TV. Like he is such a gentleman. He and his wife are so kind and gracious to the volunteers, to everyone. I mean, there's some guys, you know, that can get in their own head and be really intense and, you know, put on a, you know, a wave to the crowd, you know, and they look really nice. But Scotty is as good in front of the camera as he is behind the camera. And so to have him, you know, win is just awesome. And he just to show that he is the best for a reason. He's, you know, what is he, over 100 weeks, I think, ranked at number one in the world. I mean, like, he is as, and then you have Rory talking about him. He's like, yeah, I looked at, you know, what did Rory say last year? I think at some point you would know probably better than I would. Rory said, I looked at Scotty's game and what he was doing, and I had to learn from it. You know, I mean, like you get other top ranked players in the game saying, I'm looking at that guy's game and trying to see what he's doing. Like that's just what he's doing right now is pretty special. And we're really proud to have him as our champion and, you know, have him coming back here soon.
Well, he's certainly got it back, and after starting the season a little late, you know, with the accident, but with his the stitches in his hand and et cetera, et cetera. But last year he had rounds of 65, 64, 64, 65. His total of 22 under par was one off the tournament scoring record. But I think he's totally found his game by now. And you had mentioned Rory McIlroy, now the Masters champion. A lot has changed since last year. He's a career Grand Slam champion, Nathan. So what are your thoughts about Rory? I remember I saw you guys at the Masters under the big oak tree. And oh, my goodness, what a Masters. And now Rory is going to be coming to the Travelers, you know, as a career Grand Slam champ. That's how great is that?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And again, I kind of mentioned this earlier. Like, I am so excited for our fans and sponsors and volunteers. And I mean, Anne, you've known us long enough to know, like, you remember when we were thrilled to have, you know, one of the top 20, one of the top 30 or whatever. And now, I mean, we're sitting here talking about the fact that, you know, we're going to have, you know, we had Scotty's defending and Rory and Xander and Ludwig. I mean, you know, all through the top 10. And then, you know, to have the best players in the world here is awesome. But I mean, Rory, given that, I mean, that scene at Augusta, right, at the Masters when he just collapses on the green, and like, I think everybody was caught up in that moment and, you know, just happy for him. And to have him coming back here kind of in that, you know, in that space of career Grand Slam, I mean, that's very rare air. And so to have him here and to, you know, to know him personally, and, you know, he loves coming here. And so to have him come back, and I know the fans are so excited to see that piece of history that he's carrying with him now, and then to come see him in person is great.
You should have some washing machine chipping contest going on. Rory, I mean, he was on Jimmy Fallon.
Was that Fallon?
Yeah. Wasn't that funny? That would be a cool thing to do at the Travelers for all the kids. I mean, you have so many things going on. I want to get to that in a second. But again, we were talking about Scotty being there. Rory's going to come again. Xander, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Ludwig Åberg. I mean, how great is Ludwig? I mean, I think, you know, he certainly can win on any given day. Your thoughts about this young Åberg coming to the Travelers?
So, I have to say this about Ludwig. He is very similar to Scotty in that as nice of a guy as he looks like on camera, he is off camera even better. We gave him an exemption a few years ago. You know, we always try to, you know, find some young guys to give exemptions to. And he was so appreciative and so gracious. And he actually came to an event a couple years that we hosted. And, you know, he interacting with some press and media and things like that. And then afterwards, he just stayed and talked to you. And it's those simple little things. Like, he looks you in the eye and asks you questions. He shakes your hand. He doesn't feel rushed off. He doesn't, like, drift. He's engaged. He is he's one of those players that, like, after you spend 30 seconds with him, you're like, I want that guy to win every single week. And just how he approaches the game. And I mean, he's a great young man. So, you know, to have Ludwig, you know, coming back and again, you know, kind of establishing the relationship we've had with him and to see him, you know, do so incredibly well. And he's going to win in buckets. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were like, Ludwig's going to win your tournament. I'm like, that's totally possible. You know?
Yeah.
So he's a great young man with an unbelievable amount of talent. And I love how fast he plays. Like, I love how he gets up to the ball and wherever it's going to go, like, he is committed. And I absolutely love that he, just how he plays. He doesn't really, at least it doesn't look like on the outside, you know, second guess himself. He gets up there. He's like, nope, this is what we're doing. And I'm going to trust all the work that I put in and I'm going to hit it. And, it's pretty cool to watch.
No pace of play issues with him, for sure.
No.
I love his swing. Beautiful form, just no nonsense. I can't rave enough about Åberg. What about Keegan Bradley, Ryder Cup captain, winning in 2023 at the Travelers? Your thoughts on Keegan?
I mean, that was such a fun year for him, walking up 18 and how emotional he got and the crowd was behind him. And you know, just that he's, you know, there's very few New England guys and he was the New England guy, you know, and to have him win was pretty cool. But then, you know, I mean, the mustache that he's grown, we really can't not talk about that, Ann. I mean, that is a very Tom Selleck-esque bold move that, you know, captains grow stashes, right? So the fact that he had to, I'm kidding, you know, but it is great. When I first saw him, I was like, oh my goodness, that's a big one. So anyway, with him being, you know, Ryder Cup captain, the pressure that you know, comes with that, especially, you know, at New York. And I mean, there are so many things that, that I know he's carrying with him right now. And I know he wants to play his way into the team and, you know, all that type of stuff. But I mean, Keegan has been an awesome, awesome champ. He's always supported the event. I mean, since, you know, he was obviously first came out here on tour, and, you know, he has hundreds of family members and friends that come out and watch him. And, but that was pretty cool to have him win and then just, you know, keep our relationship going with Keegan and the boys and the whole deal. So he played
so well in 2023. Remember, he was not selected to play in the Ryder Cup team at Marco Simone in Italy. Can you imagine? Yeah. I was so mad he wasn't selected. And can you ever imagine he would become the 2025 Ryder Cup captain? Boy, how things turn around.
I know.
Around,
you
right?
Look, the last 2 to 3 years, and what an emotional, you know, I'm sure roller coaster that's been. Because I think everybody thought he had done enough to be on the team. He thought that, you know, and I think everybody thought as well. And then to not get the spot, and then, you know, obviously kind of saw it unfold on Netflix and that, you know, how they documented that and on Full Swing. And then, you know, and to come back and be the captain, it's just, it's pretty cool to see. So, but I know, listen, I know that that's awesome, but it's also, there is a weight on that, you know, that he carries, and he wears that flag, you know, and he is so proud to be the captain, and I really, really hope he comes with the win.
It is my pleasure to say hello to Hal Sutton, winner of 14 PGA Tour events, including the 1983 PGA Championship and the 1983 and 2000 Players Championships. And Hal is also a former four-time Ryder Cup player and captain of the Ryder Cup. So nice to talk with you.
Thanks, Ann, and looking forward to visiting with you.
Hey, we are coming off some very exciting final rounds in pro golf. Rory McIlroy finally won a Masters title, capturing a career Grand Slam. And then Justin Thomas wins the RPC Heritage, his first title in almost 3 years. What do you make of this exciting golf the last 2 weeks?
Well, I think Rory winning the Masters is one of the most electrifying Masters we've seen in quite a while. And I think a lot of the world was pulling for him to complete the Grand Slam. I certainly was. And then Justin to win after 3 years. I know what it's like when you haven't won in several years and people expecting you to win, the weight keeps mounting on your shoulders, and I'm sure he was glad to put an end to that dry spell.
Yeah, I know you had a 9-year winless spell. I was reading it went from 1986 to 1995. How did you stay positive?
It's difficult, you know. Seems like there's a lot of negative thoughts all around you, you know, with people doubting. They, you know, that's what they tend to talk about because that's news, you know, and it's, people want to hear those things, and you hear it too, even though they're not talking directly to you. You know, you're listening to what everybody else is saying. Then you begin to doubt yourself. And but anyway, you know, just keep persevering.
And that's exactly what Rory McIlroy did, finally winning that Masters title. Oh, gosh, after 11 years trying to capture a career Grand Slam, what were you thinking when you saw that roller coaster, just crazy round?
Well, I think that's what made it exciting, really, to be honest with you. He hit some crazy shots that, you know, nobody expected him to hit, you know, like when he basically almost, I would call it a little bit more than a chip in the water on 13, which, you know, was a, would have never expected him to do that. And then the pitching wedge on 18, I'd never seen that many three-shot swings in this last 9 holes. So it was exciting for everybody watching.
Yeah, I mean, it was just this wild combination of brilliant shots with some pretty ugly, I guess it was because of nerves. I mean, what does it say about, you know, conquering your nerves and just having that kind of resilience?
Well, you never hear anybody say that they were nervous because they don't want to admit to that. But the truth is, everybody's nervous on things like that. And, you know, somehow you get through it without showing the nerves, but or most of the time you do. But all the great players were nervous in those times. You know, you'd have to have ice water running in your veins not to be nervous in something like that.
You mean, gosh, talking about nerves, Padraig Harrington in my book, Life on the Green, he told me, and I thought this was an incredible revelation. He told me he not only gets nervous when he tees it up, but he has fear as well. And it was, you know, his advice is to embrace that fear because it's normal. Did you have fear like that, or is that just unique to Padraig?
Well, I don't know if I had fear, but I think the fear is of failure.
Right.
You want to succeed, you know, but you do have to embrace that. You have to realize that that is a possible outcome, but so is success a possible outcome. And, you know, you keep your mindset on the success part and you try to put the fear of failure in the back of your mind. So
it's all normal, very normal. So embrace those nerves, embrace that fear, that's for sure. Well, Justin Thomas wins his 16th PGA Tour title, and I was happy for him at the RBC Heritage. What do you think these recent wins for these guys mean heading into the PGA Championship? Now, I know Rory has won two PGA Championships. JT has also won two. So what are your, I mean, obviously the confidence is through the roof, you would think.
I'm sure it is, and I'm sure that it makes for a great showdown. And, you know, Scottie Scheffler has been up at the top but hadn't played his best golf, and I'm sure he's wanting to right that ship as well. So the PGA Championship in North Carolina, it ought to be a great event.
Have you played Quail Hollow?
I have not played Quail Hollow, so I'm not a good judge of it, other than I've heard many, many good things about it.
Well, I know there's the Green Mile, the closing three holes stretch, which is very challenging. And I know Rory's won there four times. So it'll be interesting to see how this Masters title frees him up, right? Rory McIlroy, just what's next for him? I mean, he's going to come in with a lot of confidence and momentum. And how do you think he's going to do going forward?
Well, that's hard to say. You know, he's lifted a big monkey off of his back, and he could either play real free or he might be exhausted as well.
Right.
So you never really know. I wish him well. He's a great guy. Just recently I was at TPC and he was sitting a few tables over from me when he got up. He came over to the table and spoke to me for a little bit. You know, he didn't have to do that. And that's just the kind of guy Rory is. So, you know, he's a friend and I was happy for him.
What are your memories of winning the PGA Championship at, gosh, it was at Riviera in 1983?
Yeah. Well, my memories were that I got to beat my boyhood idol, Jack Nicklaus. So that's the biggest memory from that event. You know, he was in the clubhouse. I was one shot ahead and I just had to get it to the clubhouse. So, you know, having Jack Nicklaus standing on the 18th green watching me come in, you know, that was, and I was able to end up parring 18 and beat him by one. So that was one of those memories that I hold close to the heart.
Not bad. Beating the best, Jack Nicklaus. Wow, what a great memory, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was a, you know, a dream come true. You know, of course, it set the stage for a lot of people to have a lot of expectations that, you know, I didn't realize what was going to be next. And, you know, all of a sudden I went from chasing my own dreams to having to live up to everybody else's expectations. And that can be frustrating, you know. It's not an easy task.
When you won in 83, Hal, your winner's check was $100,000, if I read this correctly. And last year, the PGA champion earned $3.3 million. The total purse, by the way, was $18.5 million. What are your thoughts about the huge money the PGA Tour players are earning today?
Well, you know, I went on to win the money list that year with like $450,000 or something. And now the leading money winners earn whatever they earn, 25, 30, 40 million. I don't know what it's going to be this year with Rory. But anyway, you know, I'm sure that the people that came before me looked at it that way. I'll tell you a quick story, Ann. Sure. I worked with Byron Nelson when I was first two or three years that I was on the tour. And I would always go over to Preston Trails, and he called me after I had been Rookie of the Year, and I made like $237,000. And he would watch me hit balls for about 30 or 40 minutes. Then we'd go in and have lunch. And so he called me after I had been Rookie of the Year, and he said, let's come over. And I did. And we had gone in to eat lunch, and I excused myself to the bathroom. I came back out, and big old alligator tears were running down his cheek. And I said, Mr. Nelson, what's wrong? And he said, nothing, Hal. He said, you know, he said, you just won $237,000. And he said, I feel like I had something to do with your golf game. And he said, you won more in this year than I won in my entire lifetime. I feel like I had something to do with the tour. I had something to do with the purses that are where they are now, and I had something to do with yours. He said, these are tears of joy.
Wow. That is intense. Whew. What a, yeah. I mean, he
so
was
that
just kind incredible
of puts it into, that puts it into perspective about money, you know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. I mean, you did it for the love of the game, right? For the joy. And so did Byron. And do you think there's too much money now in the game? Is it kind of ruining the sport?
Well, since you asked the question, I used to think legacy meant something. I think money means more than anything else now. And I think, you know, I think back in our day, I mean, I'll give you, for instance, I was 25 years old when I led the money list, and my life wasn't set for the rest of my life. I had to get ready to go the next year because I didn't have enough money to make it for the rest of my life. Some of these guys now make so much money that they could quit tomorrow and they'd never miss a beat. And that changes the desire level for some, not all, but for some.
I asked Phil Mickelson this question and Rory McIlroy at the U.S. Open at Brookline a couple years ago. And Rory, I asked him, you know, what does legacy mean to you? And Rory had the best answer. He says, you cannot buy your reputation. You cannot buy your legacy.
Love that. That, yeah. I would have expected him to answer it that way.
Yeah. And it was a long-winded answer. But, you know, it was, and I asked Phil the same question the day before, and he looked at me like he was going to choke me.
Well, he didn't want to have to answer that.
I know. Well, I also followed it up with, and you think your legacy has changed since you've joined Liv? And of course, that got on full swing on Netflix, and you could see him glaring at me. You know, he said one line, and then he actually had a decent answer that went on and on, but it, you know, they cut it off. But anyway, speaking of Liv, obviously the money in the PGA Tour, I believe, is a direct result from Liv Golf. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it had to be, right? You know, they had to do something. I never have figured this whole thing out. I mean, what is the end result for Liv? I mean, these guys certainly made a lot of money. I could see why some of them did it. You know, Lee Westwood, the guy, I could actually see why Phil Mickelson did it. He was at the end of his career. And, you know, that was a lot of money. But people like John Rahm, I couldn't figure out why he did it. You know, he obviously, legacy didn't mean anything to John. I mean, the money meant something to him. And, you know, what is the end game for the Liv? I mean, as far as Saudi is concerned with, I mean, I've tried to watch Liv on TV. I understand the game at a deep level. I cannot understand why they're doing what they're doing. A 54-hole golf tournament, let me just tell you, sleeping on the lead for one more round is a whole lot tougher than just doing it for three rounds or two rounds. And how can a winner not finish on the same holes as the other guy? I mean, you know, you might be in theirs, you might be finishing on the easiest par five on the whole golf course, and the other guy might be finishing on the hardest par four on the golf course. That's not a correct finish. And I don't know, I could go on and on, but I won't.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir. I agree with everything you said. Well, having said that, would you like to see the top players on both tours playing together more often?
Well, I would like to see the best players playing against each other more often. I would. And I think all the golf fans around the world would like to see that. I don't know how. I think that's going to be a slow process to get it back. And I also think that some of the guys that have departed might not ever be in that environment again.
And how did the guys who did not depart feel? How would they feel if, you know, they let the other guys back in? So there's too many factors here. And, you know, that's why, in the, you know, the negotiations to me sound like they're not going anywhere for sure. But that is a topic for another time. Let me ask you about Makefeld putter. This is the first time you're endorsing a putter, Hal Sutton?
It is the first time. You know, they had talked to me for a year or two, and I just wasn't ready, I don't guess. And then I finally decided, well, look, let me come up there and go through y'all's factory and see why y'all do what you do and why you say what you say. And it was a great experience. You know, their technology is pretty sound. They're trying to get the ball with less skid effect, get it on the ground sooner, and all the weight is through the equator of the ball, and then you're able to move the weights around as you feel like it suits your stroke. And you know, I didn't understand all that as they explained it to me, but once I went through the factory and went through the fitting, I was really amazed, to be honest with you. So you know, I was always either I had Ping Answer or Scotty Cameron, Newport News most of my life. That's what I won most of my golf tournaments with. And all the new putters, the new age, the data that we're able to compile now was after me. So I guess I would say I was skeptical to begin with. Mm-hmm. But after going through it, I just said, this is a must. I'm happy to do this. I'm happy to support this because I think what y'all have done is fantastic, and I think it'll help a lot of golfers.
Well, good for you. I'll have to try it sometime. It looks beautiful. I looked it up on the website. It looks like a solid putter, and it has what's called a radial cusp technology?
Yeah, the radial cusp, which is, it kind of grips the ball, if you will. It's hard to believe, but you'd have to do it in slow motion to even have any idea of it. But it gets the ball on the ground quicker. And the less skid effect, I'll give you this. If it's skidding, that means you've either cut across it or if you cut across it, then it's spinning to the right. It's in the air as it hits the ground, spinning to the right, it's going to the right. And the same thing is true from the other side. So, you know, by getting it on the ground quicker, there's less rotation of the ball.
I have to ask you about the Ryder Cup before I let you go. Obviously, Bethpage Black, Ryder Cup, end of September. New Yorkers are so excited about that. And you've played on four U.S. Ryder Cup teams and captained the U.S. team in the 2004 Ryder Cup. What are your thoughts about playing at Bethpage, these guys? And have you had a chance to talk to U.S. Ryder Cup captain Keegan Bradley?
I have not had a chance to talk to Keegan. Coming to Bethpage will be, it's a unique experience to have the Ryder Cup in New York. And it's a great golf course, a hard golf course. You know, I've always said if the Ryder Cup was played sometime earlier in the year, the Americans might not be so tired of playing. But it always seemed like to me that the Americans are tired of playing at that point, and I just hope they get there with a lot of desire to win. So,
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, the schedule is grueling enough, right? And it's at the end of September. Yeah. And these guys don't have a lot. Somehow the European team seems to find more ways to practice and play together before the Ryder Cup than the Americans do.
Well, I can't give you the, can you imagine how many times I've been asked this question? And I wish I could give everybody a concrete answer. But the truth of the matter is, by the time the fall gets here, most Americans are tired, and they're tired of traveling. They're wanting to spend time with their family. They've been on the road all year long. That's the only answer I've been able to give, and I'm not sure that's sound enough or if it holds water. But, you know, it just seems like their will to win is not as strong as the Europeans. The Europeans seem to have a strong will to win.
Well, you think at Bethpage, I'm sure they all have a will to win. Bethpage and the New York fans are just going to be just so enthusiastic and probably over the top, but that's a good thing. And so, you know, they'll will the Americans to win, I think. If you could share any advice to Keegan Bradley from your experiences, what could you tell him?
That's a great question. I wish I could give you a solid answer other than just do your best. Listen to your heart and your assistant captains, and fire away.
I love it. Hal Sutton, I'll see you at the PGA Championship. I hear you're going to be in Charlotte, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I haven't been to a past champions dinner in quite a while. I'm going to go this year, and then we got a couple of little things there to do for Makefield. So looking forward to those two.
Well, continued success, and I appreciate your honesty.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks so much, Hal Sutton. Let me tell you about my latest book. It's called Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, with a foreword by the great Jim Nantz. Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf features 12 iconic golfers, 6 men, 6 women, sharing life lessons and pearls of wisdom. Wisdom and lessons they've learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day lives. Everyone from Amy Alcott, Ben Crenshaw, Padraig Harrington, Bernard Longer, Nancy Lopez, Jack Nicklaus, Dottie Pepper, Gary Player, Renee Powell, Annika Sorenstam, Jan Stevenson, and Tom Watson, all sharing life wisdom. Just great stories that they learn from their incredible golf careers that they take with them on a day-to-day basis and use in life. We all can learn from their wisdom. Whether you're a golfer or not, you're going to enjoy their uplifting lessons and stories. Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, available on Amazon. My thanks to George Pepper, Nathan Grub, Hal Sutton, and Mike Goodsell in production. As Theodore Roosevelt once said, believe you can, and you're halfway there. Have a great week, be kind, be safe, and look forward to talking with you next time right here on Sports Interview with Ann McCrory.